Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money
at Menards. 12 o'clock hour, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick with you. Derek Mason moving his son to college. He'll be back on Friday. We say hello to Jonathan Hutton, who joins us every Wednesday at noon of Outkick 360. You can hear him and Chad and Paul every day, 2 to 5, 94.9 The Fan. Hutt, how you doing?
Good afternoon, guys. Doing well. Hope you are.
Oh, absolutely. The Titans making a bunch of moves as they get that roster set at 53, what we know is being reported so far. Logan Woodside is going to the practice squad. No surprise there. As are Reggie Roberson, Mason Kinsey, Jordan Roos, Laurel Murchison, Chris Jackson, Theo Jackson, and a few others as well. But that means Malik Willis is the backup of this team. We kind of felt like it was trending in that direction the last few weeks. Now it's official. What do you think?
They made the right decision, and I think everyone saw it through the progression of Malik Willis over the three preseason games and throughout camp. And really, if you look at where he was in May and what he looked like in OTAs compared to now, I think the coaching staff, Downing, O'Hara, others, not to put them on a pedestal too much here, because Willis is no defined quarterback by any means, but the progression and development that I've seen from May until now has been very good by Malik Willis. I think he's taking to the coaching. We saw him, as the preseason games progressed, step up in the pocket more. That's not saying it was enough, but more. And, from game one to this past week against Arizona, I think it was clear who won the backup job. Long term, there is a great chance for them to develop Malik Willis into a starting-level quarterback. He's not there yet. He's not close to what Ryan Tannehill can bring to this team. And if Tannehill goes down, they're in a world of hurt. They were in the same situation last year and the year prior with Logan Woodside too. Even though he was performing well in the preseason, I think everyone agrees there is a huge drop off in overall command of the offense and how they run things. So, they invested in Willis, and in this day and age in the league, guys, I wouldn't keep three quarterbacks on a roster, and I think the Titans are using that spot wisely.
Are you as concerned as I am about just the overall depth at the receiver position right now with the reports of Racy McMath going to IR? He'll miss the first four games. They have four on the active roster, Woods, NWI, Burks, and Phillips, and then they're adding some to the practice squad as well. But I feel like John Robinson's going to need to address that position before they take on the Giants.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe it happens before the Giants, Chase. If they're going the veteran route, it makes more financial sense to sign someone after week one, where the contracts become weekly instead of locked in on September the 10th. So if they are looking for a game plan against New York in week one, they're going to go a heavy two tight, heavy Derrick Henry, and they have a healthy starting group at wide receiver. When they suffer their injury up top, and injuries happen, when that happens, that's when the depth really becomes a massive concern on the outside, like it was last year. But this is I think what we see on the roster is a more tip of the cap to a 2020 version of how the offense was built, which is heavy tight end play, some wide receivers getting involved and needing to make some big catches at big moments. We saw that year too. But I think it's more tied in and running back heavy in the passing game. And that's not necessarily a bad thing for Ryan Tannehill in week one. Once they get past that game, that's when they can start re-signing players or adding veterans that are on the street. And it's not necessarily a locked-in contract like it would be right now.
Jonathan Hutton from Outkick 360 is with us for two segments today. The Colts released Dennis Kelly, which, of course, Twitter went nuts saying that the Titans needed to bring him back. I know I've seen some reports that it may have been batted around. It's not an official thing, but Would you take a flyer on bringing Dennis Kelly back as more of an insurance policy for that swing tackle position?
I'd love to see him back here. It's no breaking news. It would be breaking news if they didn't discuss him. They have discussed multiple players. They've traded for players at safety, traded for players at tackle. They should absolutely be discussing Dennis Kelly back in this offense. Kelly, so if you're going to go back and grade Dennis Kelly, the player, on his final year here, he started the season his final year at left tackle because Taylor Lewan popped for PEDs. And he was much better at right tackle throughout his tenure here than he was at left. And that is the big concern for me on the line. I think they can do okay, not great, but okay at right tackle as it is right now, as long as Taylor Lewan stays healthy. But he hasn't played a full season since 2017. And when he goes down, that's when the offensive line musical chairs happen, and that's when you can't help majority of the time help on the right side with an extra tight end or an extra running back, because you're also needing to help on the left side. Right now, like, if we're just spitballing and what we foresee happening on the front, Petit Frere is not going to be on an island. He's going to have tight end help and running back help, and Lewan will be the player on the island on the opposite side more times than not. If we're comparing the two sides, if Lewan goes down, they're screwed on their depth. And that's where you need a vet that can swing around and play both spots. I know Petit Frere was moved around there a bit, and he was the first up whenever Lewan had to go out in one of the joint practices. But that is it's not a good scenario if you're using Raiden and Petit Frere on your offensive line in a starting role. That's where things get truly dicey.
Yeah, these are things that they have to be thinking about, all of these possibilities. We have this image, Hutt, of what Dennis Kelly was for this team, which was a pretty darn good find. I would raise my hand and say it's one of the bigger things that I sort of joked about on the day of the trade. I was like, who is this guy? Who is Dennis Kelly? Why are they giving up on Dorial Green-Beckham, who at least might still have a pretty decent ceiling? And they proved me totally wrong. Yeah, they that was a home run trade. It was a great trade that they made, and they got tons of mileage. But at 32 now, what do we know or not know about his level of play? Can we assume he would be the same level of player as what we last saw him at?
I would assume that for the right side, Willie. Because I think it was a more natural fit for him playing opposite Lewan than it was moving around. And he's known for being the swing guy. He was just better on the right side. That's where I think the more quality play came from him. Look, in the evaluation process, they're going to know him better than anybody based on front office and, of course, having him and knowing his abilities. And also his brother is the passing game coordinator. So it makes sense that he could come in and provide the backup role. I don't think they would bring in Dennis Kelly and start him opposite Lewan from the jump. I think they would use him as the true backup role to Petit Frere. I think they want to develop Petit Frere. And again, I think they feel okay about it, given the fact that the offensive line, as it stands right now, is healthy on the opposite side. That's when, that's when the true value of Dennis Kelly steps forward, is what happens when Ben Jones slides out, and then is Aaron Brewer going to be, if you don't have someone active on game day as the true backup center, Aaron Brewer is your backup center, and then you move guys over. They have to come up with all of these solutions, and I'll give them credit. They've done a good job over the last 2 years of doing that, but they have had far better depth over the last 2 years than what they have right now. And Kelly was a big part of that depth and, in some cases, necessity to start. Quesenberry was not a starting tackle last year. He was, but he's a backup tackle that was a starter. And probably that's how I would define Dennis Kelly now, but again, I defer to them on the evaluation.
Yeah, I'd like to think that Kelly was much better than Quisenberry at his best. Yep. Hopefully he is still reasonable. And so that, let's use that as the barometer. Let's just say replacement level. Let's call Quisenberry replacement level, which is what they got from him. To his credit, he stayed out there, right? He was out there every game. He gave him what he had. Where do you think the ceiling is on Petit Frere, and what's realistic? Can he be better than replacement level as a rookie?
Yes. I mean, we have seen, Willie, you've been here for the entirety of every era of this team. You've seen a number of late round picks come through and become strong players. David Stewart was not great his rookie year, but he was fine. He was average. And I'm not looking for a Jack Conklin all pro caliber rookie season out of Nicholas Petit-Frere. But I mean, let's be honest here. He's the best option they have with the highest ceiling given their options at right tackle currently. The ceiling for me with Petit-Frere, and I think they view this in a long-term plan, is he plays left tackle. Taylor Lewan has discussed at length about what the future holds for him in Tennessee and the money owed and the guaranteed money left on his contract and all of this and that. Petit-Frere played left tackle last year at Ohio State and played a ton of snaps there. So in the ceiling category, he develops into a true athletic top-tier left tackle. At the where he is right now, if we only see some development over the course of his rookie season and beyond, he can play the right tackle position and be a serviceable starter for them across their offensive line. You know, no one's talking about Aaron Brewer the same way we are Nicholas Petit-Frere, but Nicholas Petit-Frere comes in with a much higher ceiling based on being drafted alone than how Aaron Brewer developed within camp over the last couple of seasons and on the practice squad and his development up to where he is now. So I think they see that same type of path for him where they're going to give him help, but I don't think they're, you know, it's not like they put the pads on in joint practices and said, man, this guy needs a year. He needs to, we're going to put him on the back burner. He's going to be inactive, and we're going to see where we are whenever we get to OTAs a year from now. That's how they treated Dylan Raidens a year ago. This is the opposite for Petit-Frere. He's starting. Last year, Quisenberry beat out Raidens, and it wasn't even close.
Jonathan Hutt, now Kick 360, is with us. Coming up next, we'll look at the defense, as we've talked a lot about the offense, as we continue our conversation with Hutt. That is all coming up next on Chase Willie and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Talking Titans with Jonathan Hutt, now Kick 360. Welcome back in, Chase Willie and D-Mace, 102.5. 106.3 The Game. You can hear Outkick 360, 94.9 The Fan, weekdays from 2 to 5. And Hutt, when's the fantasy draft?
Coming up next Tuesday at 6th and Peabody. Yeehaw Beer, Old Smoky Moonshine hooking us up with a great spot at the arcade. Live fantasy draft next Tuesday. We always do the Tuesday after Labor Day because rosters, for the most part, are set. We know the injuries. And it allows everybody to draft based on what's going into week one, which did just hit us up on Twitter at Outkick360. We'll be happy to consider you for the league. $1,000 cash prize from Two Rivers Ford, among other great prizes. So we hope there's as much interest as there has been in years past.
Well, I have it on good authority of somebody that's going to be in that league, and I have been told I have to come. So you'll probably see me on Tuesday.
I'll do a toast to Chase McCabe's suit that evening.
No doubt. Practice squad reports continuing to come out. Looks like Des Fitzpatrick will also be on the Titans practice squad once again. But as you look at the defense, very heavy at linebacker, except there were a couple guys that I really thought, Jack Gibbons, Joe Jones, I thought they were going to make it. Ultimately, John Robinson decides to keep Dylan Cole, Chance Campbell. Those two did not make it. Did that surprise you at all?
It did on Joe Jones based on what he did in the preseason, 16s in 6 years. And it felt in a weird, I don't know why I thought of this situation, but his performance in the preseason felt like Dave Ball back in like 2007, 2008, where he had just tried to scratch onto a roster, found a good fit with a position coach, and he did a great job in the preseason with his sacks and ended up making the roster on the back end and then had a role on the defense. And that felt the same way for Joe Jones. Yeah, so in a way, yes. They're going with a younger, you know, Campbell is just a younger version of Will Compton, right? Like that's the version of the player that they've been using on and off the roster for the last couple of years. And we're talking about positions that should not play unless they see an injury during the middle of a game, other than special teams. So it's a role that's clearly defined for special teams, where you're not going to go heavy at that particular position on a two-down player unless you need a big option due to injury, in which case they're probably signing someone if it's a long-term problem. And they also believe Monty Rice is coming back by October. So that's the other thing to factor in when he comes off PUP.
What do you think about the DBs? Ugo Amadi, who they just traded for, he makes it. Trey Avery at corner is somebody, we kind of talked about Chris Jackson a little bit. Also Josh Kalu making it as well. I still think that's a position that could be tweaked as they go.
Yes, and they're going heavy defensive backs. I think that's also a game plan move for week one and why they were churning the roster so much, trying to get trades for that third and fourth safety for the five and six defensive back packages. I think just looking at the week one game plan, Saquon Barkley is going to be split out and be used a lot more in the passing game than what we've seen in years past based on Brian Daboll and how they're going to deploy him. And this is where the five and six defensive back packages come into play, because you need guys at the safety spot, a veteran that can step up and go man-to-man on a tight end whenever things are split out wide, that can also identify a run gap, put the helmet in and go and identify where it's going to open up and make a big stop, and have some veteran savvy on down and distance and where the quarterback is trying to get to based on the route concept of the position that they're covering. And they didn't draft high enough at that position to expect that to happen this year with Theo Jackson. So he's back on the practice squad. It makes a ton of sense that he's there. They can move him up as they continue to develop him. And then they load up on a veteran like Ugo Amadi, who has played a ton of snaps in the nickel role in Seattle. He's played over 600 snaps on special teams throughout his career. And a guy that immediately, Vrabel said it after the game, he's like, you can tell he's played these. We plugged and played him against the Cardinals, and he did okay. Like, you could tell his head wasn't spinning. That's what they were searching for, why they made the conditional trades this preseason, because A.J. Moore wasn't that guy. A.J. Moore is a special teams player that did not step into that role. They were trying to find a guy that could, and hopefully, for their sake, they believe that's Amadi. If not, they're going to continue, as you said, Chase, to plug and play guys based on matchups and game plans. And I expect that they think they're going to use the five and six defensive back packages quite a bit over the course of their season, based on what they've done at inside linebacker and based on how they're going to use Amani Hooker. And if Molden steps in, he's
talking to Jonathan Hutton from Outkick. And Jonathan, as I look over the roster for the practice squad, I feel like they kept everybody they wanted to keep, and I really.
Joe Jones made it.
We all love Joe Jones. But I think I'm taking as a given, they really know what they're looking for with particular roles, some of the ones you're talking about right now. I like that. I find it interesting. You know who had the most players picked up who were cut? And by far, this was the team. Did you see this? I just happened to catch this on the scroll.
You've told me.
I told you. So yep. Chase can't answer it. Hutt, you got a guess?
I'm thinking of bad rosters. It was either Chicago or either the Giants or the Jets.
Okay, now remember the question. It's who had their players picked up by other teams after they cut them?
Oh. I thought you meant who picked up the most players.
Well, I think Chicago is the answer to your question, right?
They
claim six. But who had the most players picked up? This one, it will surprise you.
Is it the Raiders?
It's the Jets. Seven. The Jets cut seven guys that other teams picked up and put on their roster. I find that really interesting. Because it's like there's a game that you play, right, Hutt? There's, you know, who's the least attractive to other teams? You know, because we'd like to keep this guy around. You know, like Joe Jones is a great example. You know, Chris Jackson is a great example, right? But you have to kind of hope and roll the dice that nobody likes these guys.
Yeah, and you know, and by and large, teams get back the guys that they cut because they keep their own. You know, and it's based on the development. It's based on the time spent since April and May, in March, since March in some cases, where you've invested this, so let's try to get them back. The 16-man practice squad, the six spots that you can devote to the veteran caliber players also plays a huge factor in how teams are maneuvering this. You can protect four of the six or four of the 16. So I think we tend, as a football community, to overvalue what we see week in and week out. Like, oh, Joe Jones is going to be claimed by another team. Well, he's on his sixth team for a reason. Right. No knock on Joe Jones, but yeah. that's how it works. If you want him back, chances are the Titans can get him back. So, yeah, it seems like the Jets let go of the wrong players.
and we probably, honestly, when you say that, we probably should have been thinking that way all along with Woodside. So it's almost like, unless from the get-go, no matter how well he played or no matter how well Willis played, the real question was anybody going to pick up Woodside? It became very apparent that nobody was, and so they've got him in their midst if they need him.
Yep, and Willis didn't come in and just completely look lost, so that allowed them to make that move, and they have a guy who they say and we believe is very good in quarterback meeting rooms, and he operates the offense, and Woodside's in a perfect role for them where they can protect him now as a veteran on their practice squad every week if they so choose among the four, and he can be there in case of emergency. If something happens to Tannehill during the week, he can be brought up to the roster now. So they maneuvered that perfectly given the fact that they invested the pick in Willis.
All right, roles are my big word of the day. What do you see Treylon Burks' role in week one?
This is the biggest question I have about the offense right now, Willie, because I think I can tell you the role of every wide receiver except for him, based on what we've seen, right? Like, I can look at Kyle Phillips and say, Kyle Phillips feels like 45 to 50 catches this season for like 550 yards, like a third down guy who knows where the sticks are.
I love that.
I can spitball this. I don't know. So is Treylon, here's my dilemma. Is Treylon Burks a 700-yard receiver, or is he a 1,100-yard receiver? Because A.J. Brown was a 1,000-yard receiver his rookie season. And while I'm not trying to judge Burks based on A.J. on quantity, there are elements of what they're going to miss that Burks is going to be required to bring to this offense, the big moment plays. So, that needs to be his role. They may roll out with two tights and go with Woods and Westbrook Akine on the first drive, and people will lose their minds because Burks is starting. But as long as they have a plan for Treylon Burks in that game to provide some splash moments, the second play of training camp, Tannehill goes deep to Burks, and he makes an extended catch that everybody was tweeting out about. Like, okay, here's a guy who missed a lot of OTAs and minicamp but came up with a big play on the second play. He is here, and he's healthy. He made it through individual drills. We get to the first team period, and he makes a big play. First or second possession of 11-on-11 or 7-on-7 against the Bucks in the joint practice. What do? They dial up deep to Treylon Burks, and he comes up with a big play over a starting caliber corner. That's what I want to see in week one as much as I want to discuss what he brings this season. I can't tell you where he fits in on a numbers category because I think it's one way or the other. He's either truly just a number two package type guy, or he develops towards the end of the year into their go-to number one receiver. And I think he can be a number one receiver in the league. We saw that at Arkansas. He was the go-to player. But he has not shown enough for me to say, yeah, he's coming in and he's making an impact week one just like A.J. Brown did. And that's no knock to anybody in the development of this. That's just an honest assessment of what we've seen. Because I think we all see the true talent. But I haven't seen him just take over and claim a spot on how to develop the role, as you put it, Willie. And that means there is a ton of pressure, if we want to say that, pressure on Tannehill and Woods connecting on some big plays as a number one wide receiver option in what's going to be, I think, a tight end heavy passing attack.
Well, a lot of moves still yet to come before week one. I appreciate the time as always, Hutt, and we'll be listening today starting at 2 on 94.9 The Fan.
Thank you, guys. Always enjoy this. I'll be listening.
All right. Thank you, Jonathan Hutt. Now kick 360 every day, 2 to 5 on 94.9 The Fan. Coming up next, D-Mace is going to join the conversation. We'll get his thoughts on the roster. Plus, I have a question for all of you when it comes to Treylon Burks. We'll do that coming up next, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase William, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Streaming on the Game Nashville app, Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, and now Derek Mason on the phone with us as we are reacting to the Titans and what has happened there. And D-Mace, I know you've been moving this morning, so I don't know what you know.
Okay, so hold on. Before we get to the Titans here, D-Mace, it's a process, all right? I know my crew will be heading your way here tomorrow. So what's the setting? First of all, how's the weather in Boston right now?
The weather's great, actually. It rained a little bit this morning, but it's sunny. You know, the clouds are out, but it's a nice breeze. So if you're gonna do some moving into dorms or apartments here, I think today and probably tomorrow is the best days.
Okay, not bad. Good to hear. So it's very Boston-y. You know, that sounds good. Now, how is year two compared to year one? You've been through this with your daughter, so. DJ's the second guy through, so you know this process. But how is year two emotionally and, you know, executing the plan?
Well, this is year three for him now.
So oh, this is year three for him. You're way ahead of the game. You got this down.
So, yeah, I'm a pro at this. But still, it doesn't get easier, man. You know how it is, Willie. When you go to drop your kids off, it's bittersweet in a sense. So, you know, you're happy that they're back in school, but you're also sad that they're leaving the house. So I had him the whole summer. So
yeah,
you know, it was good to have him around and everything. But now he has to, you know, come back to school and get his edumacation, you know.
Were you able to get him in for a haircut before?
He didn't get a haircut before, but he has a haircut appointment pretty soon.
Oh, there we go.
Okay.
Week
or two. So he's got his person out there. That's good.
Hey, you know how he is, Chase.
That's important. D-Mace has been getting haircuts for him, you know, a long time. So,
So the process, it's been wonderful, man. It's been wonderful.
The Titans have made it official and announced their practice squad, which includes Dez Fitzpatrick, Mason Kinsey, and Reggie Roberson. Those three are on the practice squad. Those on the active roster, Treylon Burks, of course, Robert Woods, Kyle Phillips, and Racy McMath right now looks like he's going to go to injured reserve. So they have four on the active roster. They're going to have to make some moves there. But my question for you guys on Treylon Burks, how much do you think we're going to hear if he struggles out of the gate? Which right now, I don't know if he's going to struggle. I just don't know if he's going to make a huge impact right out of the gate. How much are we going to hear, well, A.J. Brown really didn't do that much in his first month in the league, and then look what happened to him. Could that be detrimental to Treylon Burks to continue to have that comparison to A.J. Brown?
Well, whether it's detrimental or not, I think he's always going to be. Those two will always be linked up because of how it all happened. You trade away one guy, and then minutes later you draft another at that same position. So no matter what, whether he starts off strong or starts off slow, those two will always be linked together. I don't think it's going to be to his detriment. I think if he does start off slow, I think the excuse, you know, it will be, some people will think, hey, well, you know, AJ started off slow, so it's just customary for a receiver to start off slow. I don't think that's the case. I think the last game for him was sort of a momentum boost. He had a touchdown. He had a few catches. I think he started getting to the rhythm of the game. So I think having that opportunity the last preseason game. Now, if he didn't play that last preseason game or didn't make a catch, I would be a little bit worried, but it seems like he's in the groove of things. And now, whether he starts or not, that's a different story. But I think he'd be just fine.
Do you think that there's more pressure on Robert Woods, or has it the same amount of pressure been there throughout camp, knowing that he's going to have to basically be the number one?
Well, the pressure is on Robert Woods. When they brought him in, the pressure was on him. He's making the most money in that receiver's room. So the pressure is going to be him. Pressure is going to be on him not only to be productive on the football field, but also to be a leader in that room. The leadership part, I'm not worried about with Robert Woods, but the production on the field, that's wait and see type of deal, because still he's coming off that injury, and you just don't know how long it's going to take him to get back into that rhythm that he once was in before the injury.
Take that a little bit further, Derek, because I think we've all been worried about that part of it, but we've watched Robert Woods pretty much seamlessly go through the preseason step by step, ratcheting things up, and I think we're feeling pretty good about where he is. Should we be a little cautious about that because it's different going from this to a real game?
Yeah, I think everyone should be cautious. Because, again, and we've talked about this, guys, there's one thing. Because, you know, the thing was, well, he looks great in practice. He's cutting without any, you know, limitations and this and that. And, yes, that's absolutely right. But, you know, once he get into a game situation, I mean, those big guys leaning on him, you know, defensive backs pushing him, defensive backs landing on him, safeties, linebackers. That takes a toll on you. That's when you will really know if you're fully back or not. I'm pretty sure a few years ago, Taylor, you know, in practice he looked good and he was moving pretty good. But then once you get in the game-type situation when it really means something, that's when you start to really get it. It's sort of a litmus test of where you are after the surgery. So I think people need to be a little bit cautious with Robert Woods, because I think, you know, yes, he came back that fast. Yes, he looked good in practice. And yes, he did have a catch in the last preseason game. He looked pretty good. But there's a difference between looking good in preseason and in practice than in the game when it really means something. And those guys are really trying to go after you.
I got one more on just how you would work a rookie in. Let's say, let's put Phillips in a different category. He looks pretty advanced right now. It's just what we've seen in practice that he's going to be on the field a little bit more. But let's take Okonkwo and Burks. If you're the offensive coordinator, Derek, and you're saying, okay, these guys are only ready for a certain amount, but I want to be able to use them in some situations, and I want to put them in a position that they could make a couple of big plays. How easy is that to do at this point? And is that doable for the Giants game?
It's not an easy task, but it's a task that has to be done. I think they got to find a way. Is Treylon Burks ready or Chig ready to, you know, be starters and really, you know, go out there and take on the whole playbook? Probably not. So what they have to do is in practice, they have to find specific, they got to have specific packages for these guys to throw them in and not put too much on them. I've seen it with Kevin Dyson where they sort of spoon-fed him until he got really comfortable with what's going on. I saw it in Baltimore with Mark Clayton where they spoon-fed him a little bit at a time until he got comfortable with doing his job. So I don't see that being any different. Because Mike Vrabel is a coaching coach. He loves to teach, and he's not going to throw those guys out there without having all the necessary tools that they need. And in this situation, the tool is the mental tool, knowing the playbook in and out. If there's any hesitation whatsoever, you don't put those young men in a position where they can't succeed. Coaches always say, we want to put you in a position where you can't succeed. Well, for Chig and Burks, putting them in a situation to succeed means that, hey, listen, we're not going to throw the playbook at you. We're going to spoon feed you until you feel comfortable. Now, Kyle Phillips just seems like he's picking up the offense pretty seamless, and that could be because of the university that he came from. They probably did things a little bit different than what Treylon Burks Okonkwo did in their universities as far as how they call play. So, but I expect Downing and Vrabel to take things slow. And if they feel that these guys are ready after game one or two or three, then I see, you know, Chig in there more, and I see Burks ultimately being a starter alongside Robert Woods.
Well, D-Mace, we look forward to having you back here on Friday. Somebody that you know quite well is going to join us at 1 o'clock, and Eddie George, so that'll be a fun conversation. But enjoy a little bit more time with your son and the move, and we'll see you soon.
All right, fellas. Y'all enjoy the rest of the show.
Absolutely. Derek Mason joining us from Beantown as DJ gets moved in to his new digs and gets going back to college, but wanted to get his thoughts on the Titans roster and just all the moves that have been made. Coming up next, we'll hit a few other things because there's been some hockey news. There's been some baseball things.
Little, so time for a little change of pace.
A little change of pace. Dontrell Hilliard coming in to change the pace a bit as you listen to Chase Willie D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Middlestat, he'll send it down low. Middlestat again. Back to Darlene. Darlene to Middlestat. Middlestat doesn't shoot. Got it the other side. Thompson. He scores! Whoa! Tage Thompson.
Little call there. Tage Thompson.
The great Rick Jenneret.
Yes.
And I still have nightmares because on the Rick Jenneret celebration night, they filled the house and they beat the Predators. And it's like, man, Buffalo didn't win very many games. They had a lot of nights
Thompson
where there was nobody there, and
night,
Tage Thompson went off in that game too.
So he gets a new contract as we hit a little hockey news and some other things going on in the sports world. But, you know, it was funny. Like, Nick and I were talking about this before the show that I did not realize he had 38 goals last year.
Yeah, so this is our little change of pace hockey segment here. There's a couple of things we want to hit on. And, yeah, if you're a Western Conference follower like just about everybody who lives here is, and you're not paying any attention to the Sabres, and why would you, unless you're from Buffalo and, you know, moved to town and still love the Sabres, of course, they've been struggling for a long time. And that's an interesting team to watch. They have loaded up their farm system. They made the Jack Eichel trade. And in the meantime, they're trying to find guys. And Tage Thompson, once upon a time, was, you know, on the Blues and, you know, an okay prospect. Now he just signed
a
7-year. I don't know if I would say throw in, but, you know, I think I think if the Blues loved him, they probably wouldn't have traded him. But he is taken the most of the opportunity in Buffalo and earned himself a 7-year guaranteed contract.
Sabres also announced they're bringing back the red and black as a third jersey.
I got to ask our Buffalo correspondents here, and there's a few that work for the Predators, notably, of course, Pete Weber, Jerry Helper, but there's a couple others too. I want to poll those guys and say,
I don't know about that.
I really like their blue and gold, traditional ones. I'm not as big a fan of the big old Buffalo head with the red and black, but they did get to the cup final with Dominic Hasek.
Yeah. So that was the dominator.
I'm not a big fan of changing the colors, though. It's like the Canucks. Like, they're all pretty cool uniforms, but like choose your color set. And once you go down that road of changing the team colors when you change the uniform, you get lost.
It'd be like if the Predators rolled out a two-tone blue or the Titans rolled out a third that's the gold.
Or completely different, like red and black or something, like different, totally different scheme.
Titans still need a red jersey. I think that'd be cool.
Let's not even open that can of worms. No, I remember when they started selling those red jerseys and everybody was saying, when are they going to wear these in the game?
So the rumor was they were going to, that they were going to wear them Christmas Day, that was going to be it.
And yeah, this league, way back.
Somebody put the kibosh on it last minute and they didn't do it, but they were actually made.
Tons of people bought those.
And then they made with the current uniform, they have a red version that they've done, but they've never worn them on the field. See, now with this new helmet stuff, you know, you could do like a red with the blue pants and maybe a white helmet on Christmas. I think that'd look kind of cool.
I'm not into the red, but we will have our fashion police discussion for another day.
That's fine.
All right, so that's the Sabres part of this. But let's get to a couple of stories that I think have a direct tie-in to the Predators. Because, hey, whatever happens with the Sabres, that is only for those that wanted to blow it up. The Sabres have blown it up re-blown it up. They're still trying to get it going. It's been a long time. So the blow it up and rebuild doesn't always take just a couple of years. Sometimes it takes a long time. Sabres might actually have some traction here. They might actually be not that far away from moving in the right direction here, but that remains to be seen. But let's look at a couple other stories, Chase.
Yeah, you also have, well, and along those lines for a second, I think like the Devils and the Sabres intrigue me a little bit out of the
Been
out
working
of the East.
On stockpiling a lot of young guys, and when is it going to come together? And let's lead that into a team that went through that and now is at the top, the Avalanche. The Avalanche, as we know, went through some dark times. And it took a while to build the roster they have, but here they are. They're the juggernaut. They're the defending champions. So what's on the horizon for them? I was listening to a summer podcast. They don't do it all the time, but they do flip in occasionally checking in with our man Elliot Friedman on the 32 Thoughts with Jeff Merrick. They were discussing Nathan MacKinnon. He is sort of their Philip Forsberg from last year. He's a year away from unrestricted free agency. He is
so
right
he can
now.
Sign now.
They could sign him to an extension now. They're in a window now. He is one of the best players in hockey. He is 26, and they have had him in a bridge deal for a relative bargain, $6.3 million. Not nothing. But that number is about to go up big time. Not this year. Their roster is locked in this year. He's at 6.3. They're going to be the odds-on favorite again to come out of the West, to me. They've got a couple of question marks. Maybe they're not quite as deep and as loaded. But relatively speaking, they got a lot of ways to beat you still, even with the loss of Kadri. What does MacKinnon end up getting? This is what Friedman and Merrick were talking about. Could he be the highest-paid player in the game? Could he get what Connor McDavid, what Leon Draisaitl, what Austin Matthews, what those
should.
Guys, I think it's going to be in that number. It's going to be 11, 12, even if it's not the top, it's going to be in that range. And what does that do? It's always a big challenge when you have a player that makes that much money against the cap.
Yeah, I mean, but I think he's earned it, and you can work a few things, work a few deals. I mean, this window for them, I think, is you got a few years that it's open. You know, they just won the cup. I mean, I think they're still the team to beat in the league. You know, the Predators, when we were talking about their offseason, and, you know, I think if you look across the board, the Predators are probably the most improved playoff team that you saw this season. I mean, the moves that they made – on paper look pretty darn good, but how do they match up against Colorado?
That
is still going to be the measuring stick of, and that goes for anybody. That goes for anybody in the West and really anybody in the league of how they stack up against the defending Stanley Cup champions. But if I'm Colorado, even though I know that the cap it's going to start to go back up here in the next few years, so that's going to help. But I'm going to sacrifice not being able to sign some other players to keep MacKinnon to the max deal he can get.
And that's the skill, I think, is when you're trying to hold together a team that has some elite players, when those guys start getting raises, like let's take the Blackhawks, when Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews signed $10 million per year contracts each, those contracts are still going. They're going into, I think, the last year of those. That changed the structure. As opposed to when they were on their entry-level deals and winning the Stanley Cup in 2010 when they broke the Predators' hearts in the first round. So the skill of a Joe Sakic to maintain an elite team over the long haul, being able to keep your top players and still keep the roster from becoming too top-heavy, is the art form. And so if the Predators are going to contend anytime soon, how Colorado does this is going to be a big part of the equation. You know, it's one thing. The Predators have to just become the best team that they can be, for sure. But it does help if maybe the Avalanche aren't quite the juggernaut that they have been over the next couple of years. So that's something to watch. How much does Nathan MacKinnon get? and what do they have to do down the road? Nothing will happen this year. He's locked in. It's like the Roman Josi, right? Roman Josi, they signed him at the beginning of the season for the following year. It kicked in. They had to make plans accordingly. But McKinnon is about to make way more than Roman Josi, more than Philip Forsberg made against the cap. And so that's going to be a very interesting budgetary move that they have to do. He's a franchise player. You can't not sign him for that reason, but it is going to affect your roster.
Real quick, about a minute. Mike Sullivan, head coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins, gets a 3-year contract extension to remain their head coach. It's been a while since they've won a playoff series.
Mike Sullivan took over in 2015-2016, and they won the Cup his very, very first year. His second year, they beat the Predators in the Stanley Cup. Mm-hmm. The third year, going for the three-peat, they won the first round, and then they lost to Barry Trotz and the Capitals. This is 2018. And since then, they have not won a playoff series. He has been there for 4 more years. The last 4 years, they have lost in the first round. I admire the Pittsburgh Penguins for sticking with him. A lot of times, when a guy's been there that long, a lot of organizations, I would venture to say the majority in any sport, would just say it's time to move on. But it just tells me that Sidney Crosby and Chris Letang and Evgeny Malkin, the core guys on that team, must really love what Mike Sullivan has to offer. But can you imagine the pressure if you have been a coach in a top-level market with elite players and you haven't won a playoff series in 4 years? More often than not, those guys get canned. They don't get a 3-year extension. But it just shows you that Sullivan seems to be different than a lot of coaches, and maybe the Penguins are a little bit different. They're doubling down on him. They just signed. Remember, they signed some guys who are a little bit older.
Yeah, I mean, they brought everybody back.
They brought the whole gang back, even though they're getting up there in age. We'll see if that ends up being a good move.
Coming up next, we'll shift gears. We'll get back into some football, but college football. We'll talk to Wes Rucker of 24/7 Sports. Of course, he covers the Vols for them. A new look, Neyland Stadium. Plus, things kick off tomorrow night for Tennessee. We'll do that next. Chase, Willie, and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.